So then, in this community, how is your independent job needed? Like, what do you do in the community?
Well, I actually do a lot of local research, which a lot of biologists don't, because, Wisconsin is not terribly exciting biologically. It's a pretty young system, and, all the biodiversity is in the tropics. But, like right now, I'm working on the Milwaukee River Area of Concern project, which is a EPA designated, polluted system, and they're trying to figure out what they need to do to recover it. So I'm
So
engaged with that project to tell them what species of wildlife have declined and which ones are recoverable and how to do that.
really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's pretty cool. So, like, just off of that question, what kind of species have declined over the past?
Oh, quite a bit. We published a paper on biodiversity in Milwaukee County in 2008, which documented about a 45% decline in species richness
Really?
across four different groups.
Oh.
But, Milwaukee is a pretty heavily urbanized area, so a lot of the species that have disappeared from there are still found around here.
Well, since we're talking about this already, I'm gonna ask you about Slinger. Which reptiles are most common in Slinger?
Well, certainly the common garter snake would be the most common snake. Painted turtles and snapping turtles are really common. We have no lizards here, so that would be it for reptiles.
We heard that you did a study on the blending turtles at Cedar Lake. And can you tell us a little bit about that study?
Sure. Yeah, that turtles kind of brought me to Slinger, actually.
Yeah.
So that was way back when I was working at the museum downtown, and I lived downtown, but I was driving up here all the time studying these turtles. So the Cedar Lake Foundation was interested in the turtles because they were rare. They were a state-listed species at the time. So we put some radio transmitters on them, and we followed them around for about 10 years to try to understand where they were going, what habitats were important to them. And then they wanted to use that in their, foundation planning, what lands they should protect, what human activities might be impacting the turtles, that kind of thing.
Can you tell us a little bit about the radio transmitters? So you have to catch them and then they put it on the shell or?
So radio transmitter technology has really been booming for the last 2 decades. Every year they get smaller and cheaper. But back then, the transmitter itself was about, yay long, half an inch in diameter, with a 6-inch antenna on it. Each one cost about $150. And then we would glue it to the shell with a marine epoxy. And the battery on the transmitters would last about 18 months. So we'd always have to be able to find the turtle before the transmitter battery failed, in order to swap it out with a new one. So that all had to be timed seasonally, because in the winter you don't have access to the turtles. So every fall I'd have to ask the question, is this battery going to last through to spring or not? And if not, I'd have to get a new transmitter and swap it out. And then the receiving equipment, it's a little more expensive, but you have a handheld antenna and you're walking around or boating around. It's directional, so you're looking for the strongest signal when you walk that way. In a study area like this, you're mostly dealing with private property. So if you get a signal coming from private property, then you have to go get landowner permission in order to go find the turtle. But over time, we got a sense of what the turtle's habits were, and each turtle would have, favorite spots that it would go to every spring, every summer. And they'd always hibernate in the same area as well in the winter. So over time, it was really just a few landowners that we needed permission from. And I could kind of predict where the turtles were going to be in any given season.
Please, can you describe that turtle?
The Blandings turtle?
In comparison to the painted turtle one.
Sure, yeah. They're about the size of a football and have a really high domed shell, kind of like a German helmet. And a really bright golden yellow throat. And they live to be about 80 years old. The Blandings turtles are much more terrestrial, so they spend a lot more of their time outside of the water in shallow, ephemeral wetlands, and even in the forest, foraging on mushrooms sometimes.
Now, did you also find like a difference between like male and female like behaviors, or?
I did.
You did.
Yeah, in the spring, the males were much more mobile, running all over the place, trying to find females.
Now, can you tell us about like the turtle egg? Does that have to do with anything with like its how it grows up or how it's able to inherit the conditions it does?
Sure, I can talk a little bit about nesting and reproduction. So that was actually one of the more important findings of the study. So they breed annually. The females lay 6 to 12 eggs, and they have to dig a nest in the ground. And one of the biggest problems for turtles is nest predation. So I don't know, you know, during the spring when you start seeing turtles getting run over by cars, it's usually because they're nesting. They're trying to cross roads to nesting sites. And then you might see eggs dug up, like on the shoulders of roads. And those are mostly raccoons and skunks doing that. And raccoon and skunk populations are at all-time high levels. So they're really nailing a lot of these turtles. So that means that very few of those eggs survive. Yeah. Well, with the Blanding's turtles, we found that most of the nests were not being predated because the coons were not finding them because they're laying them much further away from shorelines, which is what the coons patrol, looking for nests. But they were laying them in agricultural fields. So some of them were getting plowed up. But the other more interesting thing was the turtles need to lay the eggs in well-drained soils so they're not wet. Before us humans came onto this landscape, the way they would find that was just open sunny areas, because that's usually... the soils are too dry to have tall trees, right? So that's kind of what they key in on when they're looking for a nesting site. It's an open, sunny area. Well, in this landscape now, that's agricultural fields. And the problem is that the soils are not appropriate for nesting. So they were laying their eggs in these really clayey soils. And clay soils have really fine particles. Sand is coarser, gravel is coarser yet. So clay soils retain water and have far lower oxygen levels. So what we were finding is these nests would never hatch. And we'd wait and wait and wait, and then in November we'd dig them up to take a look. And we'd always find the embryos were dead. They had developed to a certain stage and then died because there wasn't enough oxygen. So we're now viewing a lot of these agricultural fields as what we call sinks, where they attract turtles to nest, but the nests never survive. What they need is more well-drained soils